try to keep it to about the five, six minute mark on the feedback, just hit the key points. Give us a chance to possibly add some questions, also get a little bit of feedback from everyone else at the same time. We do need to get through the returns really quickly. I think we can start with Maciej, since Dave recommended you to start first.
Okay, thank you very much. So short update, and we had the task to deal with entity-specific items which are subtotals or combinations. So first, thanks to the IPRS team for preparing the collaterals. It was very helpful for guiding us to the discussion. And we had indeed some really interesting and insightful conversation there, which I'll try to summarize as much as I can, and please for the team members to support me there as well. So first, we slowly discuss what subtotals and combinations really are. And you can imagine that you can have it on the face of financial statements, some items summarized together. You can have them further broken down into the existing disclosures, or there can be cases that you have a subtotal which is not in the taxonomy and is not broken down. So there are a couple of cases there. I think the general consensus of the group was that this is really a weird aspect of entity-specific item, because it's not really entity-specific. What is not entity-specific is because you have the existing relationship. So let's say we have, let me just open one of our examples, that we would have intangible and other assets as a subtotal, right? Actually, intangible assets are standardized. Other assets are standardized. So the only thing which is not standardized and which is individual by the entity is the relation between them both. So actually, the question in our group which we discussed and then came with some action items, some ideas, which I will explain in a second, is that should it really be treated as an entity-specific item, right? It is treated right now as an entity-specific item because of the way how we operate with taxonomies, how we think, but in a sense, it's just the relationship just that is provided by the entity. Anything else is provided by the standard taxonomy. So we came to the idea that there is probably some different treatment in if there is an existing breakdown or non-existing breakdown for something like that, because this means that there is more possibilities to drill down or not, and this should be probably treated differently. There was some discussion that we had on the topic of how the disclosure principles should be dealing with aggregation. So to which extent should the ISB in disclosure principles allow subtotals and combinations, and what is the meaning of them? Because in some cases they can lead to the information loss, right? So if there are things being combined in a non-standardized way and not being broken down further in the notes, this is a very clear information loss to the user. So that was an interesting item. And I think the most interesting thing which we are coming up with is, I mean, we have different notion for it. So we call it double tagging, relationship or relational tagging. So what we are thinking, if you have something like intangible and other assets, in today's world, in taxonomy's world, we think about adding an additional item which will express intangible other assets. But it's, I mean, we believe it's only like this because we've been in this XBRL that just allows this for the last couple of years. What if we would allow double tagging? So we simply say just forget any additional items, put on this number, right, intangible assets, and put on this again other assets. So put both tags on it and just say, well, the relation between these two is a sum. And in this way, you would probably lose vast majority of extensions that we are calling them today. So I think in our specific topic, combination and subtotals, in a kind of consensus was, you know, is it a possibility? And we know that technically it's today not really possible in the current way how XBRL operates, because the double tagging, there's no double tagging. But from the entity-specific extensions perspective, you know, if this would be the case, we would not be discussing this item as entity-specific extension at all. So a kind of direction for the XBRL team would be, you know, is it possible to investigate this more, just to take the, you know, provide this relational tagging, provide this double tagging, aggregated tagging, however we want to call this, as a possibility to see for the future if we can get this category out of entity-specific extension. We believe there are items which needs to be treated as entity-specific, very clear, but this is one which we could, with maybe some advancement of the technology, take completely out of the discussion, and that would be probably very, very useful for the preparers. And we believe that will be very useful for, especially for the users, because they will not know what is the proportion of some such double tag, but they will clearly know what is in, right? So for this, that's the major outcome of the discussion that we had. And if this proves successful, we would, of course, as a breakdown group, we want to have a trademark on the word double tagging, so just in case you know somebody picks it up. So, so that was, I mean, the main idea was, and then Rita also confirmed that, you know, the data aggregators, this idea of double tagging or multi tagging, is a kind of common practice there. So for this reason, it seems that it's not a very strange suggestion.
Good.
So if there was a tag for that item, would you still double tag the item as well as single tag it? You know, that's just another little piece of that.
Well, it would probably, I mean, if you just think for a second, it would probably, I mean, if double tagging would be possible, we would just have the taxonomies, I mean, a number of things deleted from taxonomies, because it would not be necessary.
All the aggregation points could be deleted from the taxonomy.
And since you do them relational, that's what we're trying to say, that is because the only thing which you don't have and has to be provided by the preparer is the relation, not the items themselves. And that's, you know, if changing the notion, it's changing a lot, and we are not having really time to go deeply in discussion.
Right.
But at some items, we believe that it could bring a lot of usability in terms of how financial information is
you
being.
You could also tell the regulator, don't require tagging of things that are an aggregation point that aren't in the taxonomy. In other words, tag the child, but don't tag the parent because there's no tag.
One of the notion from preparer's perspective which we discussed was that actually through the, if you just start providing in taxonomies all the combinations and subtotals and aggregation points, then the taxonomies are exploding. They're very quickly exploding because number of permutations is enormous. Instead, you could just say, well, it's going back to the granular way of dealing with this, but it would probably help in, you know, reducing, I don't know, 18,000 was I think the number that we have from the US GAAP. I mean, at some point, you have just too many of these aggregation points to make them meaningful. So then the relationship itself is becoming probably more meaningful.
Yeah.
So there is some balance between these. And indeed, you know, just removing all the aggregation points from taxonomies makes them smaller. Not, however, losing any information or semantical baggage on the number.
You know, the two child numbers, you tag each of them. Let's say there's no tag for the aggregation point. You could just show the calculation that those two add up to the third number. And the third number, there's no tag for it, so you can't do a calculation. But you could create a new tag called aggregation point. And that tag would be used for every.
I mean, this is what we call the relationship expression, and another one is with two ideas actually. One was double tagging, and one was relationship.
Okay.
Whichever is easier to implement, we're not going into details. But some way of expressing more the relationship between existing items instead of adding things on the top.
Yeah, the double tagging. Is a great idea, I think. But that would take XII to.
Yeah, I think we have to be careful there. One thing to, in terms of double tagging or nested tagging, the inline XBERL specification 1.1 allows for nested tagging, which is often called double tagging in many tools as well. And that represents a very different paradigm where a single number is tagged. It represents two things, total of sales revenue and the total of revenue, for example, one number tagged twice. So perhaps calling it something different or representing a paradigm in a different way. The point here, of course, is the old adage of taking an egg and flour. You can count the egg, you can count the flour, and you mix them together, there's something entirely different. How do you split the egg from the flour again? The challenge to the investor is that you no longer have comparability. Your solution of a double tagging or whatever mechanism we create no longer allows for your intangible assets to be comparable. You still can't split it out.
Yeah, but that's exactly, I think, that's the point we were trying to say. If in the existing technology, we are caught in the situation that we cannot do anything, but on the other hand, I don't have the information either. If I just provide a tag, intangible and other assets, it's even more useless than knowing that it is actually intangible and other on the top. So double tagging provides me more semantics than adding a artificial extension line by a preparer, which I need to figure out anyway what it is. So from the meaning perspective, some of this expressing relationships of expressing the item was for us a bit more meaningful, knowing very well that today the technology does not allow in a direct way this to be realized.
I'd like to just intervene here. I really like this idea because I can always aggregate, but I can't always disaggregate if I don't have the information. And that's a direct quote from my friend in the corner again, Bartek. And I like this idea. This is a powerful idea.
Okay.
Trademark the break.
You've got the trademark and powerful idea. So you've got a trademark and a powerful idea. I'm just watching the clock as well.
Yeah.
Can we move on to Jim? Are you ready to go?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Okay.
we were looking at categories and category values, and any of my group, if you want to jump in and add anything I miss or disagree with anything I say, then please feel free to do so. So we focused very much on, under the questions to consider, could filing be effective without adding entity-specific items to a taxonomy? So we were thinking about categories and category values in that sense. And I think by the end of it, we realized that we were looking at two different scenarios, looking at the examples that were provided for us, that there were two different scenarios which perhaps required two different approaches. I'll come on to those in a minute. The other thing we were looking at was, I suppose we were looking at this question from the perspective of two different sorts of users. We were thinking about the regulator and the information that was provided to them, and then ultimately the end users such as investors. So when we were thinking about regulators, we were very much aware that I suppose if the regulator had wanted that level of information, then they would have created a standard tag. There would have been a tag at level 3 for that information. So if it's entity specific, then the chances are that the regulator isn't actually interested in information at that level. So that was the sort of, I suppose, a question that we had, is that does actually the regulator have much interest in this information beyond level 3 if they haven't actually suggested that a tag should be used at that level? Something for you to think about. The other thing that we thought was very significant was the materiality is making sure that you know, if information is material, that it is provided. So that's sort of a couple of sort of general ideas. Coming into the sort of specific examples, the first example we had was where a company, an entity, was breaking out its revenue into its product lines. As we thought about it, we realized that the number of different product lines looking across, you know, at this issue sort of globally, is massive. There is potentially lots and lots of different products and lots of different ways that a company could describe these products. So when you're starting to think like that, is entity-specific level tagging of any use? You know, especially thinking about it in terms of an investor. So you're going to end up with a lot of tags. They're going to be different. Can you do any kind of aggregation? get any meaningful analysis out of that? So we kind of started to think about the alternatives to that. So a couple of alternatives that were being suggested were having, instead of having a specific tag, having a generic tag. So instead of describing things as powdered milk or water or whatever, you would have a generic tag such as product 1, product 2, product 3, product 4, product 5. So and you would use them and classify them accordingly. But a concern was raised about, so a company might use product 1 in year 1 and year 2. So product 1 might be milk in year 1, and then in year 2 they've called it product 2. So you've got potential issues of trying to follow what's going on. So the other alternative suggestion was, maybe all we need is a generic tag there, such as product. So how do you know the difference between one product to the other? So we talked about the fact that you obviously have the description, so you can describe an item. And there was a suggestion that maybe that might not be enough information, so that it was considered that what might be important is to make sure that not only do you have the description of the item, but you also have a connection from that description to more information in a text node. So those were a couple of ideas that were being being thrown up. I think when you've got something like that, where you've got lots and lots and lots of lots of combinations and possibilities, the information starts to get a bit meaningless for the end user. He can't do those the aggregations that he wants to do because you know it's every time it's being described differently, or it's just not the same. As I said, we looked at another type of example, and that example was where intangible assets were being broken down. And quite quickly, we realized that there was a it was a much smaller set of possibilities of the way that you break down intangible assets. So the examples here are, you know, intangible assets other than goodwill, brand names, intangible exploration, mastheads and publishing titles. And you realize that actually there's a much greater commonality here. It's a much more smaller data set. So potentially you could be looking to say, okay, these items could be entity specific. For that to have much more meaning than the product example. Yeah, anything I missed? Anything my group wants to add to that?
I think that summed it up pretty good. Yeah. We have two other groups. I don't have a name for the new items group. Who was that?
Thanks, Jim. Approach it similarly to what Jim was saying. We're trying to look at first what the different preparer, investor, regulators would require from segregation or standalone items. Preparers generally, I feel, want to highlight material items and also maybe currently at least have a reflection of their published financials in what they're preparing under XBRL, so have consistency between the two. Whereas potentially users obviously want comparability between their items, and also but also to understand the variability between the items that are being posted. So it's really, and regulators also want the comparability there of the information. So it's really sort of our discussion sort of focused on how to provide disaggregated items or provide people with the ability to provide that detail, but keep to a sort of almost the standard IFRS taxonomy. So I think there were sort of two items primarily raised, was that you continue with extensions, but you have sort of linked extensions, or extensions that are associated to the IFRS taxonomy, so that you can look at them at the IFRS taxonomy level and then deep dive if you need to and or want to, or want to look at them in that way if you're the preparer. As well, you may have, or an alternative might be that you tag something under an existing IFRS tag, but can also tick almost a negative tag within that, which would highlight the fact that it is akin to the IFRS tag, but with some differences, and that if a person's interested in that, they can then deep dive further into what that is. So that would be another alternative to sort of identify where something's different, slightly different. I know, Kyle, you mentioned there are some other options as well, rather than having multiple extensions. I think in the UK you're saying there are various additional types, etc., that are put into the UK taxonomies that are out there or being prepared at the moment. Or you could just have a basic IFRS taxonomy, and then again you could just sort of flag that there are further breakdowns, perhaps, which is sort of similar to the other one I've mentioned, that you know you could then, and that means that the a user or investor can then go off and have a look elsewhere for information. If we don't want to put that in the XBRL taxonomy per se or the XBRL reported numbers, they can go and investigate further into that variability. In terms of standalone, we definitely didn't spend quite as much time on standalone versus disaggregated. I think, you know, the unlinked tag, again, something that sort of is vaguely associated to an IFRS. I suppose, again, if everything, sort of whether it's aggregated, disaggregated, is linked to an IFRS tag in some way, if you then also have the optionality for a tag that is not associated to an IFRS, that would also must be identified as being something standalone and outside of the taxonomy. And the inference being that you could use that in rare occasions if you wanted to highlight something that you felt it wasn't associated, but that's as far as we got with standalone. Is there anything else that I missed out on that we discussed?
Thanks, Anna. and the preparers group, help the preparers group. I don't have an issue.
I'll do that, yep.
Okay. Thanks.
We talked about what the ISB can do to help with extensions. That was the point. We came up with five things. I'll just go through each of the five. First one is to develop implementation guides. And what we meant by that is not a long piece document, but something that shows here's a disclosure, like a fair value disclosure, and here's how to tag it. Here's a segment disclosure, here's how to tag it. It would show extensions that are good extensions within there, would show things that some people extend and the incorrectly and the right way to do that. And it would show a lot of the tripping points or sticking points that people come across when working on that disclosure. We also thought the ISB would probably say, well, we don't want to show new disclosures or we don't want to be showing people how to tag things, but really all this is it's trying to give an explanation of what the taxonomy's intentions were when they created the structures and the type of taxonomy. So that would be the line not to cross, but simply that's what these guides would be. And we kind of rated these five things on essential, important, or nice to have, and we figured this one's essential because it would really get people going down the same path, not only with extensions, but other things as well. Number two was encourage industry group collaboration. So whichever industry we're talking about, those people would get together and talk about the problems they have tagging, including the extensions. So obviously they would come up with, here's the things that a lot of us are extending in this industry. Hey, ISB, please create this tag in the taxonomy. Third one is to keep doing the common practice efforts that are going on today, because they're obviously finding the right items that are being extended and putting them in the taxonomy. Four is, as early as possible, get the tagging in the exposure draft. And I know that's happening, but the more it gets in there early, the more people see it, the more they comment, the more they understand that this isn't an extension, it's here. And we considered that one essential as well. I'll go back. The industry group collaboration we figured was important. The keep doing the common practice efforts important. And number four here, the earlier exposure draft tagging is an essential. And then the last one we had is telling users the different ways that they can search for tags, because the biggest problem is users don't know how to search properly, so they're saying, I can't find the tag, here's an extension. So what the ISB can do is say, here are the many different ways. Yeti, using that tool is one way, just using Excel, whatever those ways are, because people get stuck on one way of doing it and think that's the only way and the best way, but if they knew of other ways, they go, oh, that's getting me to the right point quicker. And that one we considered to be important. So, essential, two importance. So two essentials, the one being the implementation guide and the other one being earlier in the exposure draft process. That's all.
Good. Any comments for Luke? We are about 5 minutes behind, but that was feedback, I guess, to the staff. I wanted to give the staff a chance to ask any questions from the group quickly. Clarifications, anything of that nature.
The way the table's set up, this means I am staff. there were some very, very interesting ideas there. I was particularly interested, I think, to hear about the ideas that we haven't been tried yet somewhere, because anything that's new, it would be really good to look at and investigate. I was wondering, a lot of you went through and you talked about different types of users having slightly different perspectives on things, and you've given some examples of how this user might want this, and this user might want this. Were there any areas where there seemed to be some kind of irresolvable conflict, where the conclusions that were coming out were that this user is going to want this and this user is going to want this, and we can't really think of a sensible way to try and marry that particular requirement? So was there any of that coming in? Because we often hear, for example, that it's very hard to marry what preparers want to do with what investors want to receive. So did any of that come up in your discussions, do you think? I think that's all, Anna?
I know Ben raised it right at the start. You're sort of saying in our group that it's a very difficult thing to compromise and make everybody happy in this. And I was sort of saying, as a preparer, you put it in front of the board and the board wants to see your XBRL looks like your published financials. Whereas a user Wood doesn't necessarily want to see our published financials. They want to use something that's flexible and to be able to deep dive and get the information out that they want. And that's the difficulty of making it sort of user-friendly from both sides. And that's where we thought sort of the user associated extensions would help with this aggregation, that you can then look at it at different levels and produce that information. But as long as in a preview you can see something that resembles what you're publishing in old school paper print elsewhere, that would help the preparers at least.
Could I just weigh in on that? I don't see that as a conflict at all. Because as you know, today in Excel you can click on a button and expand a cell right into 20 cells. So if you want to file an XBRL document that looks identical to your published financials, you go right ahead. Just give me all the detail, okay, that I'm looking for behind those published financial numbers. So there's no conflict there at all.
Yeah, I think it's just finding all that information below, I think, is possibly entangled together. But you know, you can do it.
In practice, there are conflicts because filers,
they don't want to provide everything.
Well, that's the issue. They don't want to provide the information.
Well, that's not the only piece of it. The other piece of it is, you know, it depends on what your rendering tool is, and you know, in the U.S. market, the rendering tool has been the SEC Viewer,
yes.
Which hasn't been perfect. it's actually served its purpose very well, but the problem is that it renders things a certain way,
right.
And filers will do things in their XBRL document to force it into that rendering, which are counter to what we're really trying to achieve.
Right.
Now, inline might fix that, but they're not necessarily working together on that point.
So one final one was, of course, that regulators can specify either mandatory items or things that cannot be combined, for example, because they need to use them as part of their analysis. How do investors do that? Like, they can't. So the ultimate users of the data, although they may be involved in this process, have not been able to flag things which they really need and shouldn't be broken out or otherwise.
Well, there's a I'm sorry.
Actually, regulators, they are powerful, and they act in the name of public interest. So how aggregators and single investors do that? It's a challenge to, it's a challenge to the IFRS and the board of ISB rather than a challenge to the IFRS taxonomy or any SBL filing. That's my point.
That's what I was going to say.
Sorry, go ahead.
A little bit about that. So sometimes the problem about disclosure is not always XBL can solve this problem, like especially about with combining items. I think that for me, this kind of disclosure is very, the quality of disclosure is very low. So I wanted to the company to disclose it separately. But XBR cannot solve those kind of disclosures. So that before we are discussing XBR, maybe that it's better to discuss about what kind of disclosure is better for the user side. And company always wanted to hiding some specific data. And so that the company wanted to disclose in some kind of the combined data. For example, something in the others, inside of the others, what kind of bird figure, maybe the company having some kind of the bird figure inside of that. So they don't want it to disclose it. So I think we cannot always solve everything by XBR. So that I would like to discuss with together what kind of disclosure is better. And if we are providing a lot of function by XBR, the company can use it. So I wanted to stop the company to disclose in such kind of way to using some combined data. What I wanted to say, but the technology cannot separate it, the figure which is disclosing the data. So that we would like to discuss with the company side the what is the not only about XBR, what is the most best disclosure way.
I have lots of notes, and I'm going to listen back through all the recordings of things, and I've wandered around as well, so I won't ask any more questions now, because I'm aware we're eating into everybody's valuable lunchtime. But we'll probably come back at a future session and talk about what we got out of this, look through the ideas and what we think we can actually practically do based on all the feedback we've got. And thank you very much. That was enormously useful.
Okay, great. Thanks, Andy. We are